on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, March 20th, 2025 edition of InvestTalk, and we are here to embark on another hour to help you become a better investor. And a lot of times we unpack economic data, unpack what happened in the market, and give you some perspective. Today's market moves, they weren't that exciting, but we'll certainly dig into those. But ultimately, this show is about you and your questions and answering those questions that you bring to the table. So I encourage you to do that as soon as you can. Anything that pops to mind, money related, investment related, don't hesitate to reach out at 888-99-CHART. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Good afternoon. I'm really of mixed emotions on this one. Rio Tinto, R-I-O, seems to be a dividend payer with over 6%, has a low P-E, and can cover the dividend, looks like pretty substantially. But I'm being advised by my broker not to buy it. I'm just curious what your folks' opinion is. Certainly take my answer on the air. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Look at Rio Tinto. And first off, I like the area that you're looking in. It's just global commodities. And this one is fairly well diversified. And it's fairly large, $102 billion market cap, only about $9 billion in net debt. So pretty good balance sheet there. And they're fairly diversified, but iron ore is their dominant commodity. They have some copper and aluminum, diamonds, gold, industrial minerals, etc. But mainly this is about iron ore. And Rio is a company out of the UK. So I like foreign equity ownership typically right now. I like getting more exposure there. And I like materials. But I don't necessarily like this name, mainly because I'm not a huge fan of iron ore. It's typically a relatively abundant commodity, and most of the time these companies are what we call price takers, meaning they're at the whims of what happens in the general market. Now, historically, they've been fairly profitable, but it's vacillated wildly from positive to negative, so I don't like that. Earnings this year are supposed to decline 3% to $6.52, then decline another 1% next year. So you have slow earnings growth, negative earnings growth actually, and analysts are downgrading on average those estimates, not upgrading. And that's why it's trading at a roughly 10 P multiple. And that's the first problem you want to back away from. Don't, P is so, it's probably the most overused, overhyped metric you can follow. I rarely look at PE, or I rarely rely on it at least. I look at it and see what it tells me about what's the market saying about growth, the quality of the brand, the quality of the business, etc. Is it at a premium to the general market? Should it be at a premium or a discount? And it's pretty clear with this name, it should be at a discount. Well, it's a decent business. It's a very volatile business, and they have negative growth. So negative growth companies are going to trade at high single digit, low teens multiples in that range, and that's where it's at. So from a PE perspective, it's not cheap or expensive. The technicals are neutral. It's been dropping sideways in the 60 range for going on four years now, because it was at these levels back in 2019, pre-pandemic. It was done nothing really for 4 years. It's paid a dividend, nice 6% dividend yield, but that's about it. Now, can they pay that dividend? Well, technically, this goes back to earnings being overhyped. Yes, they can with earnings, but not cash flow, because their cash dividend payout ratio is 117%, meaning they're paying 17% out 17% more in dividends than they are producing in cash flow. So, you know, they have a good balance sheet, that they could probably continue to do that for a little while. So I don't think the dividend's going to get cut, but I also don't think it's cheap. I just think there's much, much better opportunities if you're trying to add materials to your portfolio. There are many other companies that are much better opportunities than Rio Tinto. Thanks for the call. Now, as you may have heard, we are running through our second annual Invest Stock Market Madness competition. Today is day three of the first round, and the winner at the end will eventually win $1,000. And we'll get to the results a little later in today's show. Now, we've got a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, this is what we will cover. The first is about Social Security's privatization. Is that something that is gaining steam once again? What does that mean? And is it a good idea? We'll look at that. Also, Trump has met with some big U.S. oil executives. But will that spur those executives to drill? Baby, drill. Talk about that. And then U.S. markets. I've been trying to get to the story for a while, and how much money is in U.S. Markets, especially from abroad, compared to history. And what does that tell us about future fund flows and possibly returns? And then if we have time, we'll go over the Fed's outlook for the economy and markets after yesterday's meeting. So we'll look at that if we have time. We also get to voice bank questions. One is on Etsy. And we also have some questions that came in with the comment section on our YouTube channel as well. But most importantly, will be your live calls. So don't hesitate to reach out and give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now, we're going into a short break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk voice bank at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk.
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART.
Let me touch on a topic that most listeners need to understand. I want to talk about creating a trust and a will. Until recently, this has been a very slow and time-consuming process. Things have changed now because trust and will makes creating your will easy. And before I go further, let me pass along the news that you can get 10% off at trustandwill.com/invest. Listen, I know from personal experience that the peace of mind that comes from having one's wishes and assets secure is a good feeling. And once you get your trust and will squared away, you can focus on the other important tasks in your life, whether they are for business or fun. When you work with Trust and Will, each will or trust is state-specific, legally valid, and customized to your needs. Their simple step-by-step process guides you from start to finish, one question at a time. You'll be able to keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. Uncomplicate the process with Trust and Will. Protect what matters most in minutes at trustandwill.com/invest and get 10% off plus free shipping. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/invest.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market today. It was a modestly red day overall. You had the NASDAQ down 0.3%, the S&P down 0.2%, and the Dow marginally lower at down only 11 points, 0.03% on the day. So not a whole lot of follow through one way or the other after yesterday's Fed meeting. We continue to see some overhead resistance on the S&P around the 5,700 range. And that's where we saw a bit of a sell-off late yesterday in markets. And you had a rally this morning into 5,710, and we sold off once again. So kind of having trouble getting much of a bounce here. Now, if we get above 5,700 for a couple of days on the close, and that probably gives us room up to about 5,900 on the S&P. But overall, I do expect a choppy environment into month end that hopefully will give some resolution to the tariff situation, and that will ultimately feed into markets. So that's kind of what I'm expecting for the next, call it, week and a half or so. You are continuing to get market rotation overall. Growth did slightly underperform today, but the value side, but not in a major way. It was fairly minor, but definitely value side of the market continued to gain strength. You had gold finishing up, not a lot, 0.1%, but still at an all-time high. The dollar, and that's what, despite the dollar being up 0.4% on the day. So you can see whether the dollar's up or down doesn't really matter for gold. Gold just kind of powers higher and grinds higher each and every day. Bitcoin was down 1.5%, and you saw crude oil up 1.7%, and you continue to see some strength out of the energy patch. If you look at from the economic news, kind of in line with consensus on the initial jobless claims, as well as the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index, all of that was, you know, marginal beat. Didn't really tell us a whole lot about what's happening in the economy compared to what the market was expecting. So once again, kind of a boring day. After a lot of fireworks over the past couple of weeks, this is probably the most boring day in markets for a while. And once again, probably not going to get a whole lot of fireworks between now and month end. Now, I hope you're telling your friends and family, or you can find our audio podcast over in on video form on our YouTube channel. And let's get to one of those questions that is submitted via the comment section right now. E. Carl says, I'm down about 15% on Canadian natural resources. Is it still a long-term hold because of depressed oil prices and a weak Canadian dollar versus the U.S. dollar? I think a simple answer is yes. We like Canadian natural resources. It's our favorites of the oil companies in Canada, just to its heft and diversity and quality of its assets, etc. And this has had a very nice reversal over the past month or so. It was trading at these levels back on the 20th of February, so 20th of March now, and it had a stark decline from about $30 and change all the way down to a low of 25 and change. So nearly a 20% drop in a short period of time, but it's rebounded that rather quickly. And that is a wonderful sign for a durable bottom. When you have that sharp decline and a sharp reversal on volume, that is telling you a lot about the future, the stability at these levels for this name. And, you know, I do think it also signals that these tariffs are probably not going to, there's going to be some sort of exemption, at least on oil, Canadian oil, because, you know, there's just so much oil that we buy from Canada. If you tariff that, it's going to push gas prices, energy prices in general, much higher here in the United States. And so I think there was some worry about that. I was never worried about that. That's why we were kind of buying into this dip here. And I'm seeing some really, really nice support coming in. So big fan of Canadian natural resources. Now we have a lot of time. We've got time. So let's fit another question from our YouTube channel. BlackBerry7 says, what are your thoughts on RTO, which is rentic oil. Okay. RTO is the symbol. I hadn't heard about this name. Never seen this name, but it's a $56 billion market cap out of the UK. And it provides pest control, hygiene, protection, and enhanced services. So earnings this year are supposed to go to $1.36 and then $1.48 next year. Now, earnings estimates are coming down for this year and next year. I worry a bit about that. Last quarter, revenues were only up 1%. Earnings were down 1%. Revenue down 1%. Earnings down 19%. There we go. 2.2% dividend yield. One thing I like about this, it's out of the UK, so you're getting that foreign exposure here. But the biggest issue is that the price of the stock continues to plumb to new lows. It remains near a 52-week low, and that is my biggest issue, especially with those foreign companies gaining some strength. This isn't getting that, right? It had a big flush down from about 27 all the way to a recent low around 20 and change. So it's in a strong downtrend. It is cheap-ish at these levels, but I can't get over the chart, and I can't get over that relative underperformance and the trends in earnings estimates. So right now I would pass on Rentokil, R-E-N-T-O-K-I-L. How would you say that? I'm not sure. But RTO, I'm passing. Thanks for the question. Now we're moving to a break, still to come, my focus point, and more answers to your voicemail questions. But you can call me right now, live at 888-99-CHART.
About how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about Social Security. And there is increasing talk, once again, of privatization. Now, this is an idea that was really first floated in 2005 by President George W. Bush. And it's basically it's different than what most people think it is. Okay, so let's back up. Privatization is basically saying, think of a 401k, forced 401k participation. But instead of a 401k, it goes into some sort of other type of account, right, for your retirement. Now, currently, when there's a fund, right, there's a Social Security fund. And the Social Security fund is paid into by current workers, and then benefits get paid out of it. But it's sitting there. It's sitting there, and it's invested in treasuries. And so it earns some sort of interest rate, market rate. Luckily, right now, that's higher than it has been in the past, but it's guaranteed by the U.S. government, so it's super safe. Now, privatization would basically allow the average person to invest the money, actually allow the system to invest the money on behalf of workers in order to make a higher return. Now, over long periods of time, probably going to work out. But like I've said earlier this week about how the fact that there are periods of time, decades even, where you actually get negative real returns from equities. So while the whole idea is to earn higher returns by investing in equities instead of bonds, it's not necessarily always going to work out. And then there's the question of, do you want to take that risk with all of Americans in order to potentially earn a higher return? There's no guarantee of that, right? We know there's risk. Timing matters in a big way. And ultimately, for Social Security is really there for those lower income consumers as a safety net. So it is, right? It's a safety net. Do you want to gamble with that? I don't say gamble. Do you want to take risks with that safety net? That's ultimately the question about Social Security and privatization. That's what this means. Now, if there was a privatization in 2005 and it was invested in the S&P, for example, it would have done about four times as well as it did using, you know, investing in treasuries. So it would have worked out then. But that was 2005, right? We were just coming out of the financial crisis. Out of the dot-com bubble. So equities had rallied a bit, but they had further to go. And obviously we've had very good returns kind of post-COVID. But what about if that was 1999 when you privatized Social Security? Well, those returns look very different. So timing certainly matters. Now, will they privatize Social Security? Probably not. I don't think there's enough traction for it. But what is likely to happen is reform in some way, shape, or form. Raising the limit on Social Security taxes, for example, I think it's now $160,000 or something like that. Cutting benefits, means testing benefits potentially. Raising the retirement age, that's very possible. Or a combination of all these factors, and that's probably more likely. So in my opinion, do I think, I used to be in the camp that we should privatize Social Security. I did. I'm no longer in that camp, to be honest. Because there's other ways that investors can take bigger risks. And it keeps a floor for the average person of income in retirement. And the reality is, especially those in, you know, maybe lower income, lower educated, they don't have the means or the ability to make smart decisions. And oftentimes they fall prey to their fear and greed. And I don't think that's something we should leave up to chance. I'd rather have that consistent floor for the average American. But it's always up to everyone's opinion. Now, what are we going to next? On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story. Recency bias. I love this. How recent events skew investment decisions. This is so pertinent. So pertinent. I love this. I actually think Luke's doing the show tomorrow. So I won't be doing it, but he'll be talking about recency bias. And it's a cognitive error where investors overemphasize recent information. And it can really lead to irrational decisions, such as panic selling, chasing asset bubbles, chasing returns, and just thinking that the last 3, 4, 5 years, I see this all the time, oh my God, they extrapolate that forward, they think that's what the next 3 or 4 or 5 years is going to look like. And odds are extremely good the next 3 or 4 or 5 years are not going to look like the last 3, 4, 5 years. And most people don't realize that. They don't understand that. They don't internalize that. And so Luke's going to get into that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Markets react to uncertainty. Are you prepared? Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Your financial future depends on the answers to those questions. Justin Klein is here now and ready to talk with you. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin or Luke. I'm just calling today to get your thoughts on Etsy, ETSY. It looks like they've got a pretty good competitive moat. So their earnings are looking like they're improving, cash flow is improving. They got a bit of debt in their balance sheet, but the stock price just seems to keep falling. Is there a good support level that you could give me to get into this, or am I maybe looking at this the wrong way?
All right, looking at Etsy, this is the name that exploded during the pandemic. This is an online platform where people can go on there and make basically handmade goods and sell them. And a lot of people were buying physical goods, a lot of people had time in their hands because they were out of a job and they're getting paid by the government. So they started a little Etsy store where they made all types of things, and their business really boomed. Earnings back in 2021, $3.40, all-time high. Now, it's slowly trickled lower since then. Last year, the decline abated. Earnings increased about 5%. Earnings this year expect to go up 9% and then 11% next year to $2.83. Now, it's a $45 stock, forward-looking multiple in the high teens, around 20. So, not terrible, but growth has slowed dramatically. Last quarter, revenue is only up 1%. And revenue this quarter is supposed to be down 1%. So slow growth and probably needs a lower multiple. But that's on earnings. The caller talked about cash flow, and he's right. The cash flow is very good. Free cash flow of $708 million. On an enterprise value of $6 billion. That's a pretty good free cash flow yield. Now, as he said, it has some debt, but it's not egregious. $2.3 billion on a $4.8 billion market cap. It's taking that cash flow. It's buying back shares. But that's really been the driver of earnings growth, not really sales growth. So it's been just on a consistent downtrend. 14 relative strength, very low. Now, where is that major support level? Down around $34. It's at $44 now. That is the low from 2020, COVID low. Now, what I would be watching, because I think you have some good points here. It's a solid business with good cash flows. A lot of those people that started Etsy stores, they still have them, right? They do this a side business in a lot of cases. And people still buy a lot of stuff on Etsy. But you can't argue with this chart. It's in a persistent downtrend. Last time it peaked was in December of 2023, and it peaked out around $88 per share. Now we're cut in half. It's down 50% since then. What I'd be waiting for? High volume. Right now it trades around, 90,000 shares a day? I'm sorry, not 90,000. About 50 average volume is 3.7 million shares. What I want to see is a spike in volume. From the downside or the upside, really. Because this is just grinding lower. When you have these stocks in a downtrend, they just grind lower, slowly bleed day after day. That's what's happened for over a year now. I need a spike in volume that says capitulation is here. All the weak hands are out. Everyone's given up on it. And that would be a sign that maybe a bottom is in. But from a technical perspective, there's not really support until about $34 per share. But I like what you're looking at because I like the business and I like the cash flow. But I'd be patient on it. Now let's talk about the latest updates to our Market Madness competition. This is day three of the first round. And we have the actual NCAA tournament. Hopefully everyone's brackets are broken by now. I'm sure they are already. I know mine is. But the round of 64, and we're into the income bracket, round three. And the winners for today are as followed. So we have Realty Income beating out Johnson & Johnson. We have American Electric Power beating out Avalon Bay. We have Constellation Brands beating out Kilroy Realty Income, Realty Corporation. We have Brookfield Renewables beating out Pfizer. And we have McCormick and Company, Vici, beating out Vici Properties, beating out McCormick and Company. Then we have Clearway Energy, beating out Coca-Cola. We also have Duke Energy beating out Atmos Energy Corporation, and Procter & Gamble beating out Stagg Industries. What takeaway is there? Honestly, for this one, there's not a lot. A, we didn't have a lot of movement today in markets. It's fairly neutral. And it was also the least volatile sector or region of this tournament, the income region. I think it was Realty Income was up 0.04% on the day, and Johnson & Johnson was up 0.02% on the day. So it won, Realty Income won, because it was barely up more than Johnson & Johnson. So I want to say interesting, but not really, because it was a very boring day, but just shows you that when you get these kind of wishy-washy days and kind of go either way. Now, tomorrow is the end of the first round. We have the consumer region. That one will be more interesting. We have names like Amazon and Home Depot and Vail Resorts, McDonald's, Dollar General, Nike, etc. So that will be the consumer region for tomorrow. Now let's touch a bit on Drill Baby Drill. Now yesterday, President Trump met with some top oil executives at the White House. And what he wants to do is get these oil executives to, as he said on the campaign trail, drill baby drill. And he thinks he can do it by reforming the permit process and pushing them from a national security perspective to help compete with China in areas like artificial intelligence, which we need a lot of energy to do. However, the industry doesn't see it as clearly. They said they want higher prices. Higher prices will grow domestic production. Right now, you're starting to see actually domestic production wane a bit. Why? Oil prices are kind of stuck in, you know, this range, low 70s, high 60s. Profitable, but not the level where it's really incentivizing these companies to go out there and drill baby drill, even if you reform the permit process. And a lot of this has to do with the PTSD the industry has from the early 2010s, when shale really took off under Obama's first administration. And there was a lot of money lent. Companies levered up their balance sheet because this is this new exciting technology, and they could pump a ton of oil. And a lot of the executive incentive packages were around volume. How much volume could they produce? The problem is that when you went through the default cycle in this sector, it was around 2018. That was a sign that, you know, volume isn't the name of the game here. It's cash flow. It's a return on investment, return on invested capital, etc. And that's what these businesses or these executives are now being measured on. Now, who are these executives? Well, this is the American Petroleum Institute's Executive Committee. So these are CEOs from companies like Hess and ExxonMobil, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Phillips 66, Marathon Petroleum, etc. Now, the goal for President Trump is to increase oil production by about 3 million barrels per day so that pushes down inflation, because there is a strong correlation between oil prices and inflation. And he wants to do that by rolling back regulation once again, speeding up permitting, all of that. But if you talk to anybody within the industry, they'll say it's not about the permits, it's about prices. Best way to produce more and incentivize companies to produce more is actually higher prices. So they're kind of at odds in their goals. And then you got on top of that, the tariffs on Canada. Now, so far, there's been an exemption for Canadian producers that comply with USMCA. And so right now, there's oil's free flowing, and it's keeping prices relatively muted. But the industry has a different plan than Trump. And that is A, permit reform. That's true. That's what they see eye to eye on. They want to boost offshore oil leasing, something the administration probably would get behind, but hasn't talked about a lot. Protecting tax credits for carbon capture. Obviously, that's more of a green energy thing. It's probably not something this administration would love, but you know, they could get it. And then rolling back subsidies for electric vehicles. He's already talked about that. So that's something they can see eye to eye on as well. So I think a lot of this they'll come to agreement on, but will it actually allow or get these companies to drill, baby, drill? I think the simple answer to that is no, not in a dramatic way. The margin, sure. Here and there, there will be some energy products that or energy projects that become more economical due to lower regulation, due to easier permitting, etc. But really, you need oil high 70s, $80 a barrel to really get that R&D spending kicked into high gear. Now let's keep things moving and drop in one more question from the comments section over on our YouTube channel. Rowdy says, today my question's about short-term bond ETFs. I normally carry my extra cash in money market mutual funds, and I sell cash secured puts on stocks when I find they're cheap enough. Is a decent short-term bond fund similar to a money market mutual fund in the sense where it's pretty liquid and doesn't move up or down that much since it's short-term? The ones I was offered was JAA and PAA. JAA and PAA. These are interesting. So JAA is the Janus Henderson AAA CLO ETF. Does that ring a bell? CLO, these are collateralized loan obligations. Now the other one is PGIM's AAA, also CLO ETF, okay? So investing in very similar type of assets, yielding similar amounts, roughly 4%. Now, when you are investing in, when you're getting that extra yield above, let's say, we use SGOV, SGOV right now for our short-term cash-like exposure. That yields about, I think we're at, what are we at? Roughly 1% lower, about 4.3, 4.4, I think in that range. So you're getting 100 basis points extra yield. And the question is that worth it? Taking that credit risk worth it? Because remember, treasuries, no credit risk there. Okay. And then you go look at the chart. Go look at PAAA. And what's that doing? Well, it is now below its 200-day moving average. It's starting to weaken. Why? Because credit spreads are widening out. So if you want something liquid, super safe, this is not it. This is not it. We're entering a more volatile period. Credit spreads are, I don't say historically tight, but they're near those levels. And they typically rise in periods of uncertainty like this, and they're already starting to rise, and you're starting to see this decline. And so I just don't think it's worth trying to pick up that extra 1% because you could easily, very quickly, and you already have, if you're holding this, you know, over the past month or so, you've lost that spread in just a short period of time. This has gone from 51 to 50.5. That's about 1% drop. So I would absolutely not be investing in these if you want something that's super safe. Now let's go take a live call from Bill in Northern California, looking at Broadcom.
Hi, Justin. Good afternoon. Happy Good spring. Afternoon.
Yeah, happy and, spring. Yeah, today the first day of spring?
Yeah, it is. Today's the equinox.
I love it. I love it. Well, happy spring to you as well. Hopefully it warms up pretty soon. You know, you're looking at Broadcom. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking to add. So, I've had this. I've had it pretty much consistently over since maybe 7 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. But a couple of years, you know, like a year and a half ago, I was trying to get fancy and I was like trading in and out of it a couple mm-hmm. of times. When it went, that worked out okay initially, mm-hmm. and then it popped up right after that. Unfortunately, I got back in it. I was only out briefly, like for a month or something. I got mm-hmm. back in like around 90 mm-hmm. and held it in different accounts. And then I added some to it before it went up. Mm-hmm. And then I wish I had, I should have gotten more. I wanted more of it. And then I could have trimmed it. But because I didn't have as much as I wanted, mm-hmm. I never trimmed any up at, you know, 250. Mm-hmm. But now I'm just looking like, okay, I want to get my full position established because I'm underweight in it.
Well, I will say it's at support. Now, I do think it's expensive at these levels still, despite the recent pullback. But it is at support. But it is consolidating here at that support, right around the 200, and could easily break this. So I would personally be patient on it, but it is at some near-term support for you. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into our final break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to James in New York. And he's looking at TTI, Tetra Technologies Incorporated. It is in the oil services business. What caught your eye about TTI?
I like what they're going for. I think that they're developing technology where they're looking to take well water desalination of water and making it consumable, making it potable for drinking. I like the space, and I was looking at maybe trying to get a small cap name in my portfolio. So mm-hmm. this looked interesting to me. I think it's probably high risk and maybe high reward, but what are your thoughts?
Well, certainly high risk. Earnings are set to accelerate pretty nicely this year to 33 cents and 47 cents next year. It's a $3.41 stock. So, you know, based on forward-looking earnings, it is pretty cheap. Now, analysts are starting to temper their expectations a bit for earnings this year and next year. So I do worry a bit about that. Are you in the industry? How much do you know about their technology and billing ability to make it usable?
No, I mean, I'm not in the industry, and it's just something that caught my eye. I thought it was an interesting development and mm-hmm. something that will progress, like, you know, looking towards the future.
Yeah. I like your idea of something smaller that has maybe the ability to build some sort of economic moat around turning that water into something more usable. So from a narrative perspective, I like that. From a business perspective, it's a bit more mixed. Now, the profitability is good, but cash flows are really all over the place. And they've been all over the place really since the beginning of time. This company is not new. It went public back in 1991. And it's vacillated dramatically in its cash flow and its earnings. And if you look at shares outstanding, you know, it's gone up dramatically over the years in order to finance that negative cash flow. Now, in recent years, things are getting a bit better. I will say that. You go to like a five-year chart, it's generally been positive. But many years, it's been negative. So I think there's better opportunities within the space. But if you think that new technology has economic value that they can capture and they create an economic moat around it, then I would say yes. But ultimately, it's not for me, but maybe it's for you. I just don't like that inconsistency of historical profitability. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you much.
No problem. Now let's talk a bit about how much money is in U.S. stocks. And it is dramatic. And it's very similar to what we saw in the late 1960s. Back then, the U.S. made up more than 70% of the global investable market. Today, it's 64%. So not quite those levels. Remember, that was a time where emerging markets, they didn't have stock markets then. There wasn't stock markets in China, for example. And soon after, you had a big bear market, 73, 74. Remember talking to my grandpa, I was like, what was the worst, pre-08, what was the worst bear market you've ever been? He always said 73, 74. And this 64% has risen rapidly. It was 40% just after the financial crisis in 08. So you're talking about from 40% of the world market to 64% in 17 years. That's not a lot of time. And what's driving it? It's Silicon Valley and the concentration there. And this is very similar to what happened with Japan. And that actually, Japan surpassed the United States in total value in the late 80s. And we all know what happened with the Nikkei. Once it broke, it took a long time to get back to the top. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen with the U.S. I think we have a lot of competitive advantages, and I think there's some strength there. But it's about flows of cash and how much more money from abroad is really going to flow into U.S. markets. And I think that is the problem that we might see, is that American exceptionalism isn't as exceptional. And you can easily see, especially if there's a recession, money flowing out. The dollar weakens, money flowing out. And so that's why I say the next 3 to 5 years probably won't look like the last 3 to 5 years. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And if you need help understanding your portfolio dynamics, your risk tolerance level, and whether they meet your long-term investment goals, I encourage you to reach out to me at investtalk.com, where we can schedule a Zoom call and talk more deeply about your situation. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm.